It is a question of direction. One side says we must go the way of separating nature from agriculture so that all of the natural elements that can harbor the deadly E. coli 0157 will not harm us. The other side says we should go the way of encouraging nature in agriculture because by doing so, we will produce healthier food and a healthier environment. Naturally, we can't take both directions at the same time, and so today we pause to ask, which direction should we grow?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 581st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Luganville who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James.
Hello, Michael.
Producer Carol Stafford.
Hello.
Parmley Taff.
Hello.
Who's this? Kelsey Olson.
Good morning, Dad.
And Nick Moscagno.
Good morning.
Folks, we have a crew here today. You know, the great Yogibera once said, when you get to a fork in the road, take it. We have come to a fork in the road when it comes to growing leafy greens here in the nation's salad bowl. What brought us to this fork in the road is a bacteria called E. coli, or 15787. There have been over 20 incidents of food contaminations with this bacteria and its deadly cousins over the past few years, and people have died because they were eating a salad. To stop these contaminations, two courses of action have been put forth. One course demands that we must separate nature from agriculture in the nation's salad growing regions. To guarantee our safety, it is said we must eliminate all of the wildlife and wildlife habitat that could harbor the E. coli. The other course of action takes us in the opposite direction. Instead of getting rid of wildlife and wildlife habitat, it is said that we should encourage it by planting hedgerows and protecting riparian corridors. These two directions are mutually exclusive. It is simply impossible to have one where the other exists. It just would not work, would it? And so today we come to Yogibera's famous fork in the road, and we are going to take it with a question of the day, which is, should we separate nature from agriculture, or should we encourage nature in agriculture? Here to help us explore this question, we have with us today Judith Redmond, who is the board president of Community of Alliance with Family Farmers, or CAF. Judith, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us today from Full Belly Farms, right?
Full Belly Farm here in Yolo County, that's right.
Tell us about Full Belly. Which is kind of a famous place when it gets right down to it.
Right now, it's a pretty beautiful day here with the peaches and nectarines are in full bloom, and we've got a crew planting asparagus out in a new field, and the sun is shining.
Wow. Spring on the farm. Life begins anew. Hope springs eternal. Community Alliance with Family Farmers. Who do you represent? What organization is this, Judith?
It's a statewide organization that represents both farmers and consumers, kind of folks who want to work together to have a little more control over how their food is grown, where it's grown.
So this is just in California. Are there other organizations like you around the country?
I think pretty much every state has an organization that focuses on sustainable agriculture, the local food system, environmental stewardship and agriculture. Yeah, and CAF is that organization in California.
Good. And who pays your way?
Well, our members are paying members. They vote for the board of directors, and so they voted me in as the president. Mm-hmm. And we also get government contracts, mostly from things like the Clean Water Act, to try and enhance water quality in the state, and air quality money, because agriculture has a huge impact on both of those resources. And then some private foundations give us money as well for some of these kinds of things that we're doing.
Fair enough. And not with us today is a representative from the Specialty Crops Farm Bill Alliance. Folks, the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance is a national coalition of more than 120 specialty crop organizations representing 350 specialty crops here in the United States. This organization was brought together essentially to lobby for a chunk of those billions and billions and billions of dollars that the government takes from you and I so that we can have cheap food. And the specialty crop people were looking to get some of that money because they've never gotten any of it. It usually goes to the commodity growers and those who are growing specialty crops like the salad greens and the fruits and vegetables have gone without, have kind of had to do it on their own. So this year they put together an alliance and went to Washington, D.C. and said, we want some too. And that's what they're doing. Apparently, every person belonging to the 120 specialty crop organizations is in a business meeting today and can't come out to talk for one reason or another. So we'll have to make do without them. But the reason we wanted to talk with them today was because of a provision they had written into the Farm Bill that would determine kind of the direction it will take when we come to growing the nation's salad greens. Now, Judith, the specialty crop people put together a piece in the Farm Bill. Essentially, they put a marketing order in the Farm Bill that will kind of govern food safety, which is something all very new. And your organization, along with a bunch of other organizations, are standing up and saying, well, wait a minute. We shouldn't be doing this. Why are you saying that?
Well, I'm sorry the Specialty Crops Organization isn't here to explain on their own, because there's actually a number of provisions of great interest to us consumers and farmers that they've been responsible for in the Farm Bill. The marketing order that you referred to is this new strange beast that is being used to govern how farmers farm, basically mm-hmm. to govern on-farm practices. And so there's one of these things in California, there's one of them in Arizona, and the proposal now is rather than go state by state, why not just tell farmers nationwide that they have to farm in certain ways? And it's all around, we think, or what they will tell us is that it's all around this issue of pathogen contamination of food, especially with this deadly pathogen that you referred to, E. coli.
Right.
0157, but I unfortunately I think it may really be more to do with shifting the marketplace towards these processed bagged greens that are so convenient and so popular today.
That's a real interesting one, because there's kind of two ways of doing this, and you represent kind of one way and they represent kind of another way, correct?
In terms of growing food, that's for sure. Yeah, it becomes more and more clear that the sort of the local food system which is accessible to new farmers, which is transparent to consumers, and which values environmental stewardship is apparently threatening to the really big mm-hmm. processors and buyers of produce. And they're concerned. I think what you've been referring to in terms of these environmental issues is that there's a concern that somehow wildlife would bring these pathogens onto the farm.
Well, E. coli, by definition, you know, the E. coli bacteria is a fecal-borne contaminant. So it has to come from animals or people somewhere.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, it's in all of us. But
so it's in all of us, but this particular virulent strain is the problem.
Yeah.
And so it seems like what they want to do, the specialty crop people, or more particular, the people that buy crops from the specialty crop people, the large chain stores and whatnot, the fast food franchises, those people are deathly afraid of what can happen with this E. coli contamination. And so they're trying to govern what happens in the fields through this marketing order. And what the marketing order is saying is that you have to get rid of a lot of the environmental safeguards you're putting in place to build a strong environment. Am I reading that wrong?
Well, Well, the marketing order rules in terms of the national level haven't been written yet.
Oh, okay.
So that's, but they would probably follow suit from
the California.
These state models. And actually, it's the ones that have caused the most problem are these ones written by the buyers. And I have a feeling, Michael, that the specialty crop organizations actually are more the buyers than the farmers.
Okay. We're going to talk about what these rules would look like in the fields when we get back with Judith Redman, who is the president of the board of the California, or the Community Alliance with Family Farms here in California. The phone number is today 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We would like to hear from some members of the Specialty Crop Farm Bill Alliance, for the growers of leafy greens out there. We have 10,000 watts going out there. We know you're listening. So pick up your phone and join us right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, Yogi Berra, as usual, said it best when he said, "When you get to a fork in the road, take it." Today, we are at a fork in the road. One direction takes us down the road of separating nature from agriculture so that we are protected from those elements in nature that can harbor the deadly E. coli 0157 bacteria, and thus protecting us, as it were, from nature. The other side suggests we take the opposite direction. Instead of getting rid of nature, we encourage its growth and development. We encourage wildlife. We bring in wildlife corridors, riparian corridors for waterways and whatnot, and that we encourage nature in the thought that the more natural the environment, the healthier food and the healthier the people that live in and around that environment. So that is the direction, and it is a fork in the road, and we are taking it. Today we have with us Judith Redman, who is the board president of the Community Alliance with Family Farmers, an organization here in California, sponsored by family-scaled farmers and consumers. Not with us today are members of the Specialty Crops Farm Bill Alliance, the people who grow most of the salad greens for the United States, who are taking one direction, and Judith, of course, is Judith's organization is taking the other direction. Judith, describe what Full Belly Farms looks like with respect to the environment.
Well, and with respect, I think, to this fork in the road that you're talking about, I think a lot of the farmers that are members of CAF, and certainly my farm, is it's a very diverse farm. So we grow a lot of those specialty crops for the fresh local market. Probably 50 or 60 crops are grown here year-round in pretty small, diverse plantings. In other words, rather than these large fields that you're growing for a processor of 350 or 500 acres just all of spinach, our fields are, you know, more on the scale of 10 to 20 acres of often several different crops planted. And it's all harvested by hand. So the crews are all hand crews. They're going through the fields. They see what they harvest. Whereas in a processing field, I think it's harvested all at once, one time, by machine.
Two different kinds of farms. Two different
kinds of agriculture. Yeah, our farm has pretty much built our reputation and our philosophy of farming around the idea that we want to farm with nature and with wildlife. And so we've developed a lot of habitat for example, pollinators. These are the insects that pollinate a lot. You know, most of the crops and the food that we grow is pollinated by insects, not just the honeybees, but other insects. And
right.
those insects need habitat, and that habitat is disappearing. So if you come to our farm, you'll see all around the field what we call hedgerows or habitat, basically plants that we think are good for those pollinators, whereas what you'll find, I think, on most of these farms that are growing for the processing industry are totally what they call clean field borders. In other words, no plants,
mm-hmm.
no grasses, no habitat, because they don't want habitat for wildlife. So they're actually even concerned about things like lizards or
sure.
birds that are not reservoirs or carriers even of this E. coli, but this pathogen, but that they are still concerned that those borders around the field, they in fact in the Food Safety Leadership Council rules about how they want their farmers to grow crops, they actually say not only do they want clean field borders, but they want fences and gates that are locked. So they actually feel that the public shouldn't be allowed to go into those fields and see how those crops are being grown.
Well, Judith, let's say that the provisions in this leafy green marketing agreement are made into law, and that you and other family-scale farmers around the country must comply with them. What would that do to Full Belly Farm? How would that
yeah.
change the way you do business?
Yeah, it would have to change it quite a bit, and we would have to make a lot of decisions about it. I mean, we of course do have a food safety plan that involves sanitation, worker mm-hmm. hygiene, testing our water for human pathogens and making sure there are none there, all those kinds of things. And we feel absolutely confident in the integrity and sort of safety and health and nutrition and freshness of our food. But we really would not want to take our wildlife habitat away from our farm. We would not get rid of it. And I think because of that, if we were audited, there would be a number of problems that would happen. And we probably, we wouldn't really agree. We wouldn't see eye to eye with the auditor, perhaps, I think is a possibility. And Full Belly and a lot of other farms that I've spoken with may likely have to stop growing these fresh market greens just because we couldn't. And for some farms, it may not be the habitat and environmental issues that you're so interested in, Michael. It might just be the cost and the stress of these audits would prevent people from growing for the local fresh market or even selling to some of our favorite stores, Whole Foods and local grocery stores. Would also be required to make sure that these farms had been audited. So I think the effect would be that we would have to focus on markets where the values that we hold important were respected and honored, and we would just not be able to sell into markets where they were requiring these audits.
So you might have to sneak around in the middle of the night to sell your lettuce.
Well, I don't know if it would be.
Or perhaps get hauled away in chains for having bees. Right?
I think that the local foods movement is very, very strong, and we have a 1,400 member community supported agriculture program mm-hmm. where people get a box of our produce once a week, and we go to farmers markets, and in those markets, people understand and value fresh, healthy product, and probably don't want to eat product that's been on the grocery shelf for 17 days, which is often the case with the bagged greens. So
17 days?
The shelf life after leaving the processing plant of the bagged processed greens is up to 17 days, and it's been creeping up incrementally for years. From what it used to be 5 days, it's now 17, and it has enough chlorine in it that they think that it's safe. Chlorine is there whether it's organic or conventional, And we think that one of the best ways to address this food safety issue might actually be to reduce the allowable shelf life in those greens, because if you look at a lot of the outbreaks, you'll find that it was after 12 days from the date of leaving the factory that the majority of the people actually got sick.
Wow. So is there a way for... there's two different worlds here then we're talking about. Two entirely different worlds of salad greens, isn't there? I mean, we're talking about almost apples and oranges here when it comes to how we're producing these crops.
It is a very, and I don't think we should be too, we shouldn't really condemn the processed market. I think that it has unique challenges. I think those challenges can be addressed. I think it's an important industry, the bagged processed, processed market.
Well, it feeds most of the country, correct?
Yeah, it's a very, very important part of people's vegetable diet. I just think that we should be able to coexist. And I think...
Well, can we coexist if this law goes into effect?
I think the underground reason that that some of these new organizations like the Specialty Crops Organization have started pushing these kinds of things is because it's a little bit of pushback against a very exciting, growing local food market.
So they're afraid of you.
I don't know. I wish they were here to tell us.
Why aren't they here to tell us? Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here with Judith Redmond, but not with the Specialty Crops Farm Bill Alliance, because all 12,683 of the members of that organization are in a meeting today and they can't come out to talk. But you can talk. Pick up your phone and join us. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Should we take nature out of agriculture? What do you think? Well, what do you think out there? Should we separate nature from agriculture? Should we take those elements in nature that could possibly harbor the E. coli 015787 and get rid of them, separate them out, and remove them from the growing fields of our country? Those are the rules being proposed here out here in California, and those are likely going to be the rules that are going to be proposed throughout the United States. Or should we go in the other direction? Should we encourage wildlife habitat and wildlife in their habitat and hope for a natural environment that produces good food and a strong environment? That's the fork we have come to in the road, and as Yogi Berra said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. So we're curious to hear what you have to say today, folks. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Curious to know what you folks down there in the salad bowl of the United States, the great Salinas and Pajaro Valleys, are thinking on this issue. Are you going to strip your farmland of the natural elements and make it a kind of a sterile environment in which only one thing grows, and that would be like the leafy greens like spinach and lettuce and whatnot? That's the question we have on the table today. With us, we have Judith Redmond, who's the board president of the Community Alliance with Family Farmers. Not with us today, Specialty Crops Farm Bill Alliance, who just too busy to talk on the phone today about this issue, which is their issue. Judith, we were talking a little bit about the bagged spinach, and let's go back to that, because I understand that the Food and Drug Administration did a study on where these E. coli contaminations are coming from, and 98.5% you have found of the contaminations are coming from one place, which is where?
Well, the FDA, whenever someone gets really sick from eating food and ends up in the hospital has to report back to CDC and FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, that there was a problem, a foodborne illness from one of these really serious pathogens. So actually it isn't any one study that the Food and Drug Administration came out and published. It was a series of reports of outbreaks over the last 10 years that show that 80% of the outbreaks and 98.5% of the illnesses that were attributed to fresh-cut leafy greens grown in California were on the those, they were on leafy greens that were in those bags. That's where they originated. So, and the FDA has come out and said in their, what they call their guidance for that industry, that yeah, there are some unique challenges that should be addressed and can be addressed. But they've sort of, people are starting to realize, many people are starting to realize that there's a difference in terms of the challenges for that processing industry versus the industry that grows whole head lettuce and sells it fresh to the whole market.
Okay, so, well, Judith, you folks at the Full Belly Farm, you work through a CSA, which means that people come to your farm and pick up bags of your produce, or you sell it at the farmer's market. So, in effect, you're looking right into the eyes of your consumers. How many of them have you made sick with your produce? How's that for a question?
I hope none. If you look at the, you make a very good point. There's 100% trace back with this kind of a market.
But amen.
We also sell to stores, and we do sell to wholesalers. And the thing is, it is difficult to extract the answer to your question from these FDA and CDC, Center for Disease Control, websites. But we've spent a lot of time on those websites, really a lot of time, and we haven't been able to find any evidence that there have been outbreaks that were traced back to farmers markets or these sort of box schemes.
Judith, you would know in about 14 seconds if you made somebody sick.
I think I would know, and the FDA says that they can, and they have, on record, when you go to their website, you will find outbreaks that were just two people. So they can trace back an outbreak to
a specific
place, you know, like they can say, okay, this was lettuce that was sold at the farmer's market in Berkeley. You know, they can actually do that. And it was only two people, because those two people would go to the hospital, you know, if they were really sick with this really bad pathogen.
Okay, so 98.5% of the people made ill with E. coli and sister contaminants were made ill through bagged products. None that anybody can trace have been made sick from market fresh produce. So why?
Well, it's not to say that there isn't a risk with, you know, on my farm, and that I don't need a food safety plan. I think I do, and I do, and that's why I do have one, and that's why CAF is working with.
Well, you have to because you're looking right into consumers' eyes. I mean, if somebody's going to get sick eating your food, you're going to know it really fast.
That's true.
Let's go to the phones right now, folks. We have Mike on the line. Phone numbers today: 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. You have Judith Redman, Board President, Community Alliance with Family Farmers, and yours truly, Michael Olson. Mike, welcome to the food chain.
Hi, I'd like to make just two comments.
Please.
E. coli to the lettuce program out here in the Pajaro Valley over the last 20 years has been traced to one source, and that is the river next to the growing fields in San Benito County, that the river also waters cattle. That happened about 15 years ago. And even 2020 did a special on it, okay? And it was traced to the one farm again. Now, Earthbound Farms, which is supposedly organic, waters its fields directly from pumping the water out of that river. Okay, there was no safety valve on that river water that they used to water that field.
A river runs through it.
Oh, right, yeah, basically, yeah. A nice movie title, isn't it?
Yeah. Judith, then, you were, just a sec, Judith, what you were talking about, how this pathogen is traced back to cattle and not to wild animals.
Yes, and it can be waterborne. So Mike is correct. What Mike is saying is consistent with the data that I've seen. But this is an example of the positive side of this new concern, and all of those farmers in the Pajaro Valley and the Salinas Valley that are growing these, you know, large fields are now testing and their water to make sure that it doesn't have those pathogens in it. And they're testing their pack water, they're testing their irrigation water, and they're keeping those tests on file, just like I am. But I think that you might find maybe perhaps in the past, you know, some farms might have been irrigating with contaminated river water, but I think that's unlikely to be true any longer given the new audits where they're actually, you know, really making sure that they're not using contaminated water anymore.
Okay, good. Mike, can you hang on for a second?
Sure.
We're going to pick you up when we come back, folks. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson here, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with Judith Redman, who is the board president of the Community Alliance with Family Farmers, an organization here in California that supports the efforts of family-scaled farmers and consumers interested in their products. Not with us today, members of the Specialty Crops Farm Bill Alliance who are in a business meeting today and can't come out to talk. But you can talk 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Well, should we separate nature from agriculture? Or should we, as some would say, encourage nature in agriculture? That is the fork in the road that we face, and as Yogi Berra said, we are going to take it. We have Judith Redman with us today, Community Alliance with Family Farmers, and we're continuing our conversation with Mike. Mike, go ahead. You had one more point.
My last comment is to quote George Tenet out of his book, "For everything that happens that a government acts on, they actually overreact. And if you look at the pathogen that we found in the Bajaro Valley, it is traced back only to cattle. You can't take the bobcat, the deer, the pigs, even domestic dogs walking through the field out of these fields. It's literally impossible."
What would the countryside look like if we were able to do that?
Well, I'll give you an example. Right now, when they've taken out the apple field in some of the areas of Bajaro Valley, and they've actually put in raspberries, or berries in general, they've actually changed the ecological balance by driving the rabbits out, which then changes the coyotes' habits, the skunks' habits, the raccoons' habits, and drives them up into other food sources like, you know, your barrels for your cat feed, your dog feed, and then they feed on your cats and your dog. We have to be able to balance it. And I think if you look at the majority of the farms in the Bajaro Valley, there's not a whole lot of conglomerates. They are long-term family-owned. And I think overall food safety in the Pajaro Valley, the Salinas Valley, has been very good. And I think the FDA, CDC, everybody has overreacted to this. Instead of going out to Earthbound Farms and the guy who owns that system out there and spanking them. You know, because this is a pathogen that came through the water supply. And there was no testing done.
There you go. Thank you very much for that comment, Mike. Judith, what do you think? Overreaction?
Well, I think this issue of the cattle is an interesting one, and I agree pretty much with a lot of what Mike said. It's a difficult one to figure out how to address. It is true that the reservoirs, in other words, the place that this pathogen is residing and building up and multiplying and then spreading from, it's in cattle, and that's what sort of the scientific literature says over and over and over again. And but the beef industry has a problem with it too, because we just saw that huge recall of beef.
Right.
And that particular one wasn't because of the pathogen, but in 2007 there were a record number of recalls because of this pathogen. So both the produce and the beef industry have this problem. And they'll tell me that it's very naive, but it seems to me that the two industries could work together to reduce the problem from spreading onto farm fields and into slaughterhouses.
Again.
And perhaps solve the problem in a whole different way than has been proposed in these new rules.
Okay, good. Let's go to Tony. Tony, welcome to The Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael.
Pleasure to have you aboard.
Tell me if anyone has ever gone to the basic seeds themselves and tried to analyze the seeds to see if the E. coli might have been in when they were designed. manufacturer.
Boy, that was really tough to hear you, Tony. You're on the cell phone and it's breaking up. So the question is has anybody gone and analyzed the E. coli to see exactly where it comes from? Is that what you're saying?
No. Has anyone ever analyzed the seeds that are planted to see if the E. coli was actually embedded in the chemical structure?
Ooh, there's a question, Judith. You plant a lot of seeds. Any chance the E. coli was embedded in the seeds?
You know, I don't think that in the leafy greens industry that they believe that it's a seed-borne problem. I've seen no evidence that would be the case.
Yeah, I have seen nothing in that regard either. So.
There's some concern in other crops that there might be a seed-borne issue for certain human pathogens, but for this pathogen on leafy greens in the field, no.
Okay, let's go to Paul, who is a small farmer, with a comment. Paul, welcome to the food chain.
And well, hello. I'm from northern Wisconsin here, and I've talked to Judith in the past once. I don't know if she remembers that.
Yeah, but, I do.
Hi. We had a nice little discussion. But anyway, on the implementation of this in reality would have the same effect as NAIS on livestock.
Ooh.
Because it would tend to drive out the small farmer for the corporate, you know, benefit. One of the other provisions of this is you would have to make a choice, like in my case, as to whether or not you would keep your livestock or keep your vegetable production, because
right.
they don't really even want any livestock on here.
Right.
And they're raising questions about, you know, your basic composting techniques. And I've been to direct marketing for 25 years. No one's ever gotten sick on my produce. In fact, they come back and tell me, we can eat your produce and not get sick, where we do get sick on the chemical-grown product.
Let me ask both of you a tough question. Somebody once said that whenever you hear somebody say, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you, that you got to run like heck or you're going to get in big trouble. I'd like to ask both of you a question for the ending of our program. And that question is, do you think that this measure is being put forward to get rid of family-scale agriculture? And I'd like to pick that up with both of you when we get back from this break. Michael Olson here. This is The Food Chain. We're talking with Judith Redman, who is with the Community Alliance with Family Farmers. And we're talking with Paul, who is a farmer up in Wisconsin. And you. We don't have much time left. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1980. But let me ask you, do you think that this measure to separate nature from agriculture is being put forward to get rid of family-scale agriculture and to open up the market for those who would grow otherwise? Right back. Do stay tuned. Well, a big question on the table. Do you believe that the issues be the suggestion being put forward on the table that we separate nature from agriculture is being put forward in order to get rid of those people who are succeeding by bringing nature into agriculture and forcing us to buy our food, I guess, from only one or two sources instead of many sources. Well, Judith and Paul, just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not out to get you. Is this a concern of yours? Do you think that they're out to get you, Judith?
Well, you know, it's. I don't really want to speculate too much regarding their goals and their intentions. But I can say I think that certain versions of the rules that have been proposed would definitely result in an increased consolidation in the leafy greens market, because they give a huge amount of preference to the kind of farming that those guys are familiar with.
And they make no provision for your kind of farming.
Well, they're sort of set up to work really easily for a farm that harvests everything, you know, 350-acre field all at once.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention, too, that there's a lot of information on these issues at the CAF website.
And that is?
If you want further information, it's caff.org.
Good. Paul, what do you think?
Well, I think the government's viewpoint of this is such an abstract fashion. we don't grow food in a sterile vacuum. As farmers...
But that's what they want you to do.
Well, it's just not possible. Even if you're in a greenhouse situation, you're dealing with bacteria and other things. And traditionally, throughout history, farming has been making a living within the natural community. Maintaining your biodiversity is actually a barometer of the health of the soil and the conditions you grow in.
Yeah.
And that's the reality of farming. You just can't create this sterile media.
And that's the rub, isn't it? And that's the fork in the road we've come to. One side wants us to get rid of agriculture, to separate it separate nature from agriculture, to remove those elements of nature that can possibly hold things that causes harm. And the other direction is to encourage nature and to encourage wildlife and wildlife habitat. And so, do you see any way that the two can exist side by side? Judith?
Absolutely. Yeah, I do. I think it seems to me, though, it's a little more up to the guys that aren't here on the show today.
Why aren't they here?
That's a good question. But I think that they do have there are some legitimate concerns about the processes, the way that they're growing food. But I also think that they need to let us share that market with them, the people that are growing food in a really healthy way.
Paul, do you think both can exist together?
Well, I've worked in some of the mainstream agriculture in the canning factory areas of this state, and I think that they can. They need to adapt their ideologies to understand that maybe they need to look at our side of farming and say, hey, if we have this bacteria problem, there are these other bacteria out here that will counter this by accentuating the natural side of the soil,
which is
to the benefit of us all.
Can you do that with 350 acres of the spinach? Folks, this has been The Food Chain. Thank you so much for joining us. Judith, thank you for joining us from CAF. Paul, thank you for joining us from Wisconsin. And thank you all out there for joining us. Remember, cheap food isn't.
Been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.